Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast with me, your host, Justin Chisholm. My guest this time is American sailor Ed Baird. He's the man who coached Team New Zealand to victory in the 1995 America's Cup, and then two cycles later in 2007, he helped defeat the Kiwis as helmsman of the Swiss Alinghi Challenge. In the 80s, Baird won the Laser and the J24 World Championships, and in 1995, he won the World Match Racing Championships and was named US Yachtsman of the Year. In recent years, Baird has been a regular on the TP52 circuit, and as skipper of the American Quantum Racing team, he won four seasons in the Audi Med Cup and 52 Super Series, along with three TP52 World Championships. Now Baird has returned to the TP52 circuit to lead the Quantum Racing crew for the 2019 season, and I caught up with him in Mahon, Spain, during the warm-up training session for the first 52 Super Series event of this year. So Ed, we're sitting here in Mahon. It's a couple of days, I think, before the start of the beginning of the TP52 series, the 52 Super Series for 2019. This is a class you've been associated with for a long time. Can you talk a bit about just how special this class is? Because I just walked along the dock when I arrived here today, and these boats are really pretty special, aren't they? There's a real atmosphere to this fleet.
Well, there is. Not only are the sailors, the very best that there are out in the world, but, you know, the boats and the equipment are just incredible. And, this is the third generation of 52, actually technically the fourth, that I have sailed on, but the third in this type of racing here. And, it's amazing that each generation comes up with improvements and ways to be better. And as soon as they're built and we start racing them, the guys are, coming up with that next little step. So it's really fun to be part of it, that process.
Is this your favorite class to race?
Oh, for sure. I mean, the boats are, they're just such a great size and power ratio. And, they're... The fleet is really close, the racing's really tight, but the boats are so fun to sail. It's just a pleasure whether it's blowing 6 or blowing 35.
You just alluded to it now, over each season the boats evolve technically, they get slightly faster every year, and these little modifications happen to the boats over the winter. So what's been happening in this close period? What's everybody been doing?
Well, these boats were all built a year and a half ago, except for Brunonasek, who's off the same molds, but it's a new build this year. There's little tweaks, little things here and there. People have been, making adjustments to their fin package with their keels and bolts and rudders and, little things inside, try to make their boat work a little more efficiently. What you don't see about these boats, that you don't see the interior and how the systems get set up, which is pretty special. It's pretty hard to do right and have it work consistently and accurately every time and still be super light. The systems are a big part of it. And the manufacturers of all of the equipment that we make continue to come up with new materials, and then we have to figure out how to use them the best way. And so that's what you see is just small incremental adjustments. But when you look back over, the 10 years that I've been involved, it's amazing start to finish where we've gotten to.
Yeah, I mean, talk a little bit about that, because I remember those boats back then, and they look very different now. I mean, they've become more and more like dinghies in terms of the freeboard each season until now. They just look like a kind of like a surfboard. There's very little what's the word for that on deck. I mean, you just, the cockpits are so shallow now, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, originally when this class came out, which would have been the sort of early 2000s, it was it was trying to fit into a little bit of a measurement rule here and there, but very quickly The rules makers designed it changed it to a box rule, so it just had to fit in a box. And then it was a matter of figuring out if you only can be this long and this deep and this wide, what's the best shape. And you're seeing now that slowly we've developed to this is it's a very dish-like shape, but probably one of the biggest developments of it doesn't come from the hulls. It actually comes from the combination of the fins and the trim position for the jibs. Compared to most boats that are sailing in the world, we're pulling our jibs in close to 3 degrees off centerline, and that's just unbelievable. And that has to match with the fin being able to grab in the water and not just slide sideways. So the combination of working those things out has been a big feature of making these boats go faster.
And who does that? Because I can imagine that the sailmakers have their computer modeling and the hull designers have their modeling and guys who make the fins do the same thing. But you need all of that to be synced together, don't you? Is somebody doing that? Or?
Well, we've worked very closely with the Botin office, and they've done a terrific job of coming up with ideas and bouncing them around with us, and then we tell them whether it's practical and then try to design things that fit with their newer ideas. And so between Botin and the Quantum Design Group, there's been some impressive changes that have, again, if you go back 6 or 8 years, the boats built then just can't hang on to the new ones. And it's not that any one thing is dramatically different, it's that everything is just a little different and a little better.
People often compare sailing at this sort of level to Formula One. You hear it with the America's Cup, you hear it with this fleet. I'm always a little skeptical about that and that kind of parallel, but one thing I do think is the same is just from a driver's point of view, a helmsman's point of view with a boat, is how difficult these boats must get to sail, because the cars are all about performance, the boats are all about performance. They're not designed to be easy to drive or to sail, are they? So how difficult are they to steer these boats well?
No, it's not difficult to steer them well. What's difficult is to have the entire team work together for the same goal in each moment of the race. Whether you're trying to go a little fast forward in a position on the race course, or you're trying to point a little higher and maybe not go as fast, or downwind, you're trying to roll over somebody and those types of things. The whole group has to be coordinated to work together. When you can do that well, the boats just light up.
Yeah, and one of the things I notice a lot about this fleet is that, a boat can win a race in the morning and finish almost dead last in the afternoon. There is a pecking order to some degree, but there's no gimmies in this fleet, is there?
No, there's nobody that you just expect to be in the back, and there's nobody that you just assume is going to be out front. Each day presents different challenges, and each team has different strengths. So, depending on if it's smooth water and steady air, or if it's big waves and very shifty, or if it's powerful wind with massive swells, or really just delicate light stuff. Every day is different, and every race is different. So, that's what's so exciting is to when you get those things right with your team. It feels really good.
Just before we move on, have you done very much with the Quantum boat over the winter? Any big changes, or has it been this kind of small evolutions?
Well, I think everything's incremental. We certainly made some adjustments with the foil package, and we've done some work inside the boat. We've made a few changes here and there. It's nothing major. We didn't change the shape of the hull. We didn't chop off the bow and put a new one on. Nothing like that. We didn't replace the rig or. It's just trying to make everything a little more reliable and make everything a little more consistent, to work just at that perfect level. When you pop your head inside the boats, you think, they're pretty clean. There's not a lot going on. But when you dig in, you see all these tiny little systems that just have to be so delicately maintained. That stuff, it takes a lot of thought and a lot of looking after to make it right.
I guess that is one one of the places where Formula One and these boats do kind of come together, because the shore teams here are a big part of the boat's success on the race course.
Yeah, they are. The shore team is an incredible part of the team overall. If they don't get their job right, then we don't get to do our job right. And when they do their job well, then it makes our job so much easier on race day. So that's a big part of it. But, I mean, you said, you know, how does this compare to Formula One? And, you know, the first thing that enters my mind is, you know, in a Formula One or any vehicle sport, you know, you've got a person that's running the machine. And here we have 12 people running the machine. So we have to coordinate so many things to get them right as we're working through, you know, fighting everybody else who's doing the same thing, that it's in many ways, it's a completely different sport. It still has a vehicle. It still operates at a very high tolerance, you know, level of tolerance on the boats. But we have this great big team that has to function perfectly all the time.
Now, the fleet has changed reasonably dramatically over the last, over the close period. There's the America's Cup teams that we had involved last year have disappeared, including a fairly big chunk of the Quantum crew, which we'll talk about in a second. But does that mean that the fleet has kind of lost some of its zing? Is it less competitive than it was last season?
Well, I think what we're seeing at the moment is that the overall, the fleet has never been closer. The groups have been working hard, training hard, preparing over the winter. You know, example is Tina Plattner, who just walked by us. She was new to the class last year, and she learned a huge amount and did well last year. But now she's ready to be even closer and tougher this year, and they've been training. They've put extra time in over the winter that compared to most of the teams, and it shows. So, you know, I mean, you can have the very, very best. I mean, and we do have, you know, America's Cup and Volvo Ocean Race and Olympic veterans here that are, you know, the icons of the sport, competing right alongside, you know, people like Tina, who is, you know, a fairly fresh face to the sport. And she's able to make it work because, again, it's not just one person's talent. It's making the whole team come together. And the driver's just a part of that.
So let's talk a bit about the Quantum team itself. Terry Hutchinson has gone. Dean Barker's gone. James, the coach, has gone. Somebody else, I'm sure, has disappeared from the lineup. And you've had to backfill those people. So how do you go about that? So you've rejoined the team. It's a team that you sailed with a lot before. How's this all worked out? What were the conversations that went on?
Oh, I mean, you know, we took the core group that's going to make this year happen and started talking about who we wanted to fill in the other spots. Most of the spots have been filled by people who had actually raced with the Quantum team before. Juan Vila is a navigator, a good example. You know, Jared Henderson up on the mid-bow is another example. You know, these guys have sailed on the team for several years. They just didn't happen to do it for the last two. Mm-hmm. And
So they're part of the extended family.
They really are. I mean, when you look back at the people that have been, you know, on the team over the years, there's been some amazing folks that are really fun to be around and have got terrific resumes. But then we had, you know, a couple of fresh faces. You know, we've got Andy Escort doing the runners. It's the first time for him to be part of this team. But he's been racing 52s for quite a long time. He was actually a mainsail trimmer on another team for several years. And so the really nice thing about that was that we all knew him. You know, we know that we enjoy him as a person. And we knew that his skill level was, you know, such that he would be very supportive to make the mains work well. And, of course, when you do the running backstay job on the boat, a lot of what you're doing is managing how the mast fits the mainsail. Mm-hmm. So you work very closely with the main trimmer. So it's a perfect fit for somebody like that to be in there. And he's a great guy and working out really well. You know, Cameron Appleton is, you know, one of the elite tacticians of the world and hasn't spent a lot of time sailing these boats, but he's been doing a lot of, you know, strong teams in other types of classes. So he was, you know, interested and available to come and be part of this. So that's a really good fit as well. And he's working very hard to, you know, one of the big challenges for the tactician is to, you know, have a effective way of communicating with everyone on board. He needs to explain to me what he's trying to accomplish so I can get it for him on the race course. He needs to explain to the guys what they needed to be thinking about next so they can be prepared for the next move. He needs to be looking out, you know, checking out what's happening, comparing, you know, our situation with the rest of the boats as we race, looking for ways to block people from getting what they want and to get what we want at the same time. You know, it's an interesting role that you have to play. There's a lot of hats that you have to wear.
And I guess as a tactician, you also, whether we'd make this really public, you also have to prove yourself, don't you, with the rest of the crew as well. There's a kind of confidence level that...
Well, of course. I mean, the longer that you work together with a group, you know, you're going to be, you know, understand each other better. And you know, any tactician is only as good as the support group that he has around him. You know, if we're not fast, then the tacticians don't look smart. And if we're not, you know, creative and when difficulties come, then the tacticians can't perform well. And you know, if guys get frustrated when things go wrong, which they will, you know, then, you find yourself in a bad team situation where you're not getting, you know, good results out of the whole group. So, you know, again, being the tactician is a critical role on the boat, but there's a lot of information flow that goes both directions. And if you support the tactical side of things from other parts of the boat with good, solid information at the right time, you know, it just helps that person to you know, make a better decision in the long run.
Can you talk a bit about that communication on the boat? Because you know, I've ridden on the back of these as a guest journalist on some of the races, and I'm always impressed by how quiet it generally is. You know, like there's not a lot of chat, and the chat that you do hear, with the communication you do hear, is very precise. Just talk a bit about that information flow, because I think that's interesting. You know, for maybe amateur teams, where there's possibly, it's a little more noisy on the boat and maybe not as effective.
Yeah, well, I mean, think about it as you're with your family and you're going on a road trip. And, you know, somebody has to say, here's where we're going. But occasionally somebody's going to say, hey, you know, I need to stop for, use the bathroom. Or, you know, hey, look at that wreck over there. Should we avoid that? Or are we going the right way? You know, it seems like we're, you know, we could be on a different road. So there's a lot of, you know, communication between the groups, but you need to have that clear, precise, this is what we're doing next. That call has to come from someone who has the, you know, responsibility to do that and who has the trust of the guys to, you know, so that they do their job well and they don't, or they're not looking over the shoulder. You know, again, back to the family trip in the car, there's nothing worse than, you know, grandma sitting in the back seat looking over your shoulder going, no, don't go there. What are you doing? Look out for that car. Turn left. I mean, you don't want somebody else doing the job of the person that's supposed to be, you know, guiding the process. And you got to prove yourself and get to that point. But, you know, we wouldn't invite somebody on the boat that hadn't done that well already.
And it's a very supportive thing, isn't it, a yacht crew? I mean, it's... You know, I've heard this kind of, you know, there's a no-blame culture, there's a, you know, you've got to have the right to make mistakes, to try things and make mistakes and not be, you know, not have everybody salt with you for the rest of the whole thing. And it's important, the way people speak to each other and just people's body language is important.
Oh, yeah. Well, you got to put a team together that functions well together. That is not the same. Every one of these boats has a different personality within their team. And you know, you have to blend those people together so they do work well together. There's nothing worse than trying to make a decision for the whole group and having a couple of people shake their heads while you're telling everybody what we're going to do because they don't agree. You know, you got to work those situations out and make sure that everybody is working together to get to the same place. I mean, it's just much too complicated for one person to, you know, be the only voice. Everybody's involved.
So tell us about your role now on the boat. You've been helming for, you're helming at this regatta, you're helming at the kind of pre-season regatta in Palma last weekend. Is that the role for the season, or is Doug DeVos going to be doing some helming as well this
year? Oh, Doug's definitely coming. He's definitely coming to one event, maybe two. And we love having him here with the team. He's the only reason that this team exists. Mm-hmm. He comes in, and Doug does a great job when he gets on the boat. You know, it's amazing for not sailing it as much as any of these other owners do. Mm-hmm. He jumps in and does a pretty nice job when he gets on boat. Now, one of the nice things this year is that Doug has a second 52 now, and he's going to sail that in the Great Lakes in several events at home. So he's actually going to do more sailing this year than most years that he is out there. So that's going to be fun, and we'll have a good time when he's around. He's always he lights up the team.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that people maybe don't appreciate about the owner drivers within this fleet is that they're actually all bloody good helmsmen in their own right.
Yeah.
And they almost, if they've done a couple of seasons on this fleet, they've been coached by some of the best sailors in the world. So it's kind of almost inevitable they're going to get to a good standard. But the standard, watching the racing today, the practice racing, the standard is very high.
The standard is very high. And even with... Yeah, I mean, you call it an owner-driver class, but, I mean, these guys, people like Harm, who steers the platoon, he was a professional sailboarder back in the day. And, he's got plenty of time on the water understanding how it goes. He just doesn't sail as much as those of us that are pros, but he's on the water plenty, and he's very good. And the same, you go down the list, these guys are all improving. The owner of Sled has been coming in and just each year gets stronger and stronger. He's just been on a trajectory that's bringing him right up to the top group. And Hasso Plattner is here, and took him a little time to get comfortable with this boat, because it's different than what he had been racing for most of his past few years. But he's got plenty of time on the water. So yes, and again, remember that. As important as it is to drive the boat well, driving the boat is only as good. You can only be as good of a driver as the team around you is making the boat go. You got to go the right way. You got to go there fast. You got to get the boat handling done. All the equipment has to work. Really, driving becomes a simple task most of the time. It is the one place on the team where you can have a person who's a little bit less sailing time on the water. That being said, it is nice when you get those difficult situations to know that the person driving the boat is naturally going to do the right thing.
Yeah, and instinctively.
And you do notice that's when gains can be made.
Yeah. So what is the key to doing well in this fleet?
Well, as with any type of equipment sport, having a piece of equipment that performs better than the others helps to do well more than anything else. There's, like I say, every boat here, every team here has incredible talent, but all the polished end pieces that we're using are not all identical. You'll notice that there's different sail makers. There's a couple different makers of the shrouds, the running rigging and stuff that hold the rigs up on the boats. There's slightly different builders that are maybe are using the same design, and then there's another designer. There's two designers, so you blend all those little things, and each boat has a little place where it's happier. And so, getting the one that is the best all around piece of equipment, and then using it well, is how you do well.
So let's talk a little bit about what you did today. We've been out for a training day. I was lucky enough to come along on the Quantum Chase boat, and everybody in the fleet seemed to pair off into kind of little groups, little twos and maybe threes, or people just sailing on their own, just trying to work out what was everybody trying to do.
Well, that's one of the things that's unique about sailing, is that we're an equipment sport, and in the same way that automobiles or motorcycles or things like that are raced, but we can't use a stopwatch to tell how we're doing. The nature of moving the boat through the water and through the wind each day is different. So you can't just put fixed places out there and go around and around and you know, and compare yourself to the day before. So having that second or third boat next to you when you're doing your warm-up gives you the opportunity to adjust little things and work on small details to see, you know, if it helps you to go a little faster. But it also helps you to understand, you know, the nuances of the weather for the day. You know, and weather is, I mean, we're all about the weather. If you've ever seen guys that go hang gliding up in the mountains or, you know, do the squirrel suits down through the, you know, we got to understand the weather. We got to use the wind and the currents and the waves to our advantage. And, you know, so basically we go out with these, we hook up with a tuning partner and the two of us go side by side and you know, try to go faster than the other one. So, you know, the only thing I can really think of to compare it to would be, you know, like maybe swimming or something, you know, in the ocean. But, you know, because each day is different and we got to set up things just a little bit differently. So we take that time to, you know, to just connect with somebody that we can trust, that we know what to expect from them, and see if the way we're doing things for the day is right. And if it's not, we make adjustments.
And you've got some support on that as well. You're not doing that on your own from the boat. The guys on the chase boat today, Kevin Hall, and some of the supporting cast were taking photos and talking to you on the radio.
We have our primary sail designer, Brett Jones, is on the chase boat, and he's watching after both us and platoon because he, you know, it's Quantum Sails, and they're both of those teams are the boats that are using the Quantum Sail designs. Mm-hmm. And so he's helping us with, you know, how things look from a sail standpoint. And, you know, probably a lot of people don't realize that there's a tremendous amount of adjustment that you can make to your sail, you know, with all the rigging controls that we have with the mast and the boom and the ways of controlling the sheets. So, you know, again, each day is different. Some days it's a little windier at the top of the mast than it is at the bottom. Other days it's the other way around. And, you know, you have to make adjustments of your sails to fit that. So he helps us with that. Kevin Hall is there more looking at the overall picture of how we're doing things, both tactically, but also from a boat handling and crew work standpoint. So he checks all those things and makes sure that we're performing at a high level. Maybe if we're missing something or making a mistake over and over again, then he'll come in and you know, try to help us correct that. But yeah, it's great to have those kind of eyes off the boat to support what we're doing on board.
And will you debrief with those guys at the end of each day or perhaps the following morning?
Yeah, we tend to, we come up with a pretty huge amount of data every day that comes off the boat and then goes away and gets, you know, sort of looked through and poured over. And then they dump it back to us in a more simple form and say, you were doing these things well today and these things didn't seem to be quite as good. And, you know, and this boat was going a little better than the other one by this much. And they help us be very exact with that stuff. So that takes some time. We tend to go again in the mornings afterwards and get together. But yes, we get together with those guys and talk through, you know, the things that we did well or didn't do, and maybe some things that they saw from the other teams that we weren't able to see because we were on our boat. All that stuff is important to go through. And again, you know, knowing the part that is okay to not worry about and knowing the things that are important to talk about that's very helpful to get that, and it takes a lot of experience to get that right.
Now let's just round this off. I didn't want to miss the chance, Ed, just to talk away from the TP52s and ask you about the America's Cup and the new format, the new foiling monohulls. With all of your vast experience of the Cup, I'm sure you keep a close watching eye on it all. You may even be involved in some way that I'm not aware. But what are your thoughts about this next Cup?
Well, it's interesting. You know, the Cup's taken an interesting turn here in the past few years. And, you know, it's really gone off, you know, to a direction that makes it incredible to see the equipment. And it's amazing what they're developing. But it also is hard to stay in touch with what most people are doing, you know, and that's the disappointment for me, is that it feels like the America's Cup is a bit more of an extreme sport now rather than it was never a mainstream sport, but it was mainstream sailing. And now it's a bit off to the edge. So it's going to be interesting to see if that can be brought back to the bigger groups of people. And, you know, I think one of the things that always made people be very interested in the America's Cup was just, you know, the intrigue of how close the racing was, and it was just squeezing that last little bit out of your piece of equipment. That's still happening, but when you watch it, that last little bit is going to turn into quite a distance because the boats are so much faster, and so the racing won't appear probably to be as close as it has in the past. Hopefully it does work itself into that and become close and exciting, because I think that's what people like to see. It's great to have boats that go super fast, but if that's all they do and they don't come close together, then, you know, it makes it a little less interesting.
And SailGP, a different kind of concept, same idea of very fast boats, but fleet racing now. And you know, I watched San Francisco. I was skeptical after Sydney, but I watched San Francisco, and I was kind of excited by that whole thing. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that somebody's willing to support that and make it happen and come together. The proof of whether that is where the sport is going is, you know, can we grow the numbers of people that are doing it? And if people get excited and that's what they want to put their time into, then it'll grow and that'll be great. But if it remains something that's hard for most people to ever get a hold of, maybe it's either too expensive or too technical for, you know, the common sailors to aspire to, then you wonder, you know, is that really going to be great in the long term? I hope it is, but I just don't know.
Well, we're looking forward to a great week here in Mahon with some proper racing monohulls, the TP52s. Thanks for taking the time to talk to me, Ed, and the very best of luck to you and the Quantum team this week.
Well, thank you. It's great to be part of this Quantum group. They really have an amazing system of giving us good equipment to go out and do well with. So we're lucky to be there.
So that's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast. My thanks to our guest Ed Baird, skipper of the Quantum Racing TP52 team, for taking the time to talk to me in Mahon. I'll be back soon with another interview with one of Yacht Racing's key protagonists. So until then, I'll sign off by saying thanks to you for listening, and sail fast, everyone.